Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't
know. I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, geeks of all ages, welcome to another fun and festive episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. I'm Justin Kavanagh, and with me as always is Randy Van Dyke, and frickin' Edmondson is cruising around the Caribbean right now, so he's out, and Mr. Felix is stepping in. Felix, thank you for doing so. Randy, how are you doing today?
I am fantastic.
Felix, how are you?
I am great.
Ooh. Great. I'm always fabulous. Always.
Without fail.
Yeah. I'm a little hot right now. I need some water. Maybe some ice chips. I don't know. I'm uncomfortable, though. I'll tell you that much.
This flower is a Wilton.
Yeah. My Lord. Someone open a window. This flower is a Wilton.
I do declare.
Oh, speaking of declaring, the internet was set on fire this last week when we got some crazy news out of Camp Disney, and that was that Lord and Miller are out of the Han Solo movie, and Mr. Ron Howard is in. Randy, what is going on?
Man, to say that the internet was on fire is putting it lightly, because this shit, there was so much speculation the day it first dropped early this week that Lord and Miller were no longer going to be involved in Han Solo, because it's really kind of unprecedented. They've been shooting since February, and here we are, the middle of June, or almost the end of June right now, and there's only 3 weeks of production left, and then they up and fire the directors. That's crazy. That never happens on a studio picture. It's absolutely wild. But both parties went on record as saying it was creative differences, which is somewhat of a cliche, but this time seems to actually be the case, because from everything that I've read online, it's the directors Lord and Miller believe they were brought on to make a comedy movie, and Kathleen Kennedy and Lawrence Kasdan and everybody in the Lucasfilm camp was like, no, you were brought on to make a Han Solo movie with comedic elements. And they were one reference that I heard is pretty much comparing Alden Ehrenreich's performance as Han Solo to Jim Carrey in Ace Ventura: Pet Detective. Like,
whoa.
that level of over the top. And I'm not even making that up. Those are the reports online right now.
Wow.
So, yeah, and it was actually one of the people who voiced his objection to it directly to Lucasfilm, probably to Kathleen Kennedy herself, was the lead, Alden Ehrenreich himself, saying that he didn't really like the direction that this character was going. And Lord and Miller had been at odds creatively with Lucasfilm since pretty early on. They were, when Lucasfilm was seeing dailies, they have a pretty good idea where Lord and Miller were going, but they were allowing the actors to improvise, go off script. And when you have comedic actors, or, you know, at least people with a good sense of improv, that could absolutely just negate your entire script. And being that Lawrence Kasdan and his son wrote this script, they were very adamant about wanting it to stick to what's on the page. So anyway, that's all of what led up to their parting of the way from Disney and film. And like pretty much 24 hours later, it was announced that Ron Howard would be stepping in to finish up the film, which means 3 weeks of principal photography and 5 weeks of reshoots. And as of right now, there's no word on whether or not this is going to delay the release of the movie. They're still aiming for May of 2018. So that's really freaking soon. With all these changes going on, and honestly, they're probably going to need some extensive reshoots if they need to go in and fix a lot of mistakes that the other directors made. It may not come out till December. We may go back to seeing a December release, which I was kind of surprised they were going only 6 months in between The Last Jedi and Han Solo anyway. So That would make sense to me, but there's no real word for sure on whether or not that's going to happen. The cool thing about Ron Howard, if I can just talk about that for a moment, is, you know, he's a very successful director in his own right, and he's already got a history with Lucasfilm. Sure. He did Willow, which is an amazing movie.
One of our favorites.
He's done a lot of He's done a lot of amazing movies, but I mean, that to me is very much in the same vein as what I feel a Star Wars movie should feel like. You know, mm-hmm. Albeit that was maybe a little on the dark side, but that's okay. Ron Howard, I think, is an excellent choice if they want a good old school Star Wars feel to it, and he's a big Star Wars fan himself. So I think it's a solid choice. What do you guys think about the whole situation?
Felix, go.
Okay. I don't know. I felt like it was kind of weird. I kind of joked with some people about the whole Ron Howard taking over thing. Like, are we gonna get his commentary over the whole thing, and this is just Arrested Development. but no, I mean, it's really unprecedented, at least in terms of a Star Wars film. And, you know, going into it, I'm not, like, the hype level for this movie, for me, is, like, not really there yet.
And it's not existent?
Cause, yeah, it's, well, pretty much. I mean, Rogue One was kind of like my great thing, and then now we're on to this, but we haven't seen, you know, much of anything from it. So I mean, it's understandable that my hype level is kind of nowhere near what it was for the other ones. But I mean, that said, this whole exploration of the in between, you know, what was it, Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, that era is just rich with content. And whoever is taking the reins of, you know, fleshing out Han Solo as a character during that time span, that's a lot of responsibility. So it's just too early to say whether this is a good or a bad thing. But yeah, I read up the reports of what Randy was describing too, and I thought it's crazy.
Yeah, it seems odd to compare it to something like an Ace Ventura sort of performance. That would not sit well with me. I would not like that at all. I mean, if it were a Lego game or a Lego movie, sure, that might have a place, but not in the normal Star Wars universe. That seems kind of odd. And it seems even more strange that they got this far into production without there being a little bit more of a fuss. I'm surprised that it got as far as it did if they were that unhappy with it.
Well, from the sound of it, it sounded like they kept getting notes like, okay, you got to change this, you got to change this, you got to shoot these scenes. All right, it's really important. You got to shoot these. And they're just blowing it off. Mm-hmm. Like, nah, we got this. We're doing it our own way. And when you read about some of the other experiences, it sounded like they pretty much completely trusted JJ, and he didn't really have much in the way of a big governing force looking over his shoulder with The Force Awakens. But you'll also notice from Rogue One, they brought in, who was it, Tony Gilroy? Was that the name of the guy that, the director that came in to direct the reshoots and pick up some of the slack? Because they weren't sure about the direction of that. They let the individual directors kind of, they let them explore their creativity and explore the stories without really being reeled in too much. But, you know, if the product doesn't look quite right, they'll go in and they'll kind of tweak it before releasing it to the public. That's been their MO pretty much for the last couple movies, just to kind of make sure that it still feels like Star Wars, but it gives the individual directors enough of their own personal voice in it. It looked like they tried to do it this time, and they felt that the plan was going to backfire, so they had to, they, you know, implemented phase two and had to execute some emergency protocols.
Right. Interesting.
But interestingly enough, too, I was just reading an article today saying that we might end up seeing a director's cut of Han Solo because per rules at the Directors Guild of America, if a director has directed 90%, at least 90%, but less than 100% of principal photography, they have the right to do a director's cut of the film.
Wow.
Now, they may have waived that right in part of their exit paperwork. You know, it's like, hey, we're going to pay you guys out for the rest of the work, but you're going to get out of here and you're not going to stake any claim on this movie. I don't know what deal or what paperwork they had to sign to kind of as they were getting kicked out the door by Disney. But and I don't know the exact percentage. I guess you'd have to break it down by days or by hours or whatever. But if they shot 90% of principal photography, like I said, has been already been going on for 5 months, then they would have the right to do a director's cut. Now, Disney never has to release that director's cut, but they would at least have the right to put one together. So it could exist in some bootleg fashion out there in the interwebs.
Wow. Maybe it'll get locked away in that Disney vault we're always hearing about.
Yeah, where they keep Walt cryogenically frozen.
Yeah.
There it is.
There it is. That's crazy.
This whole
thing. It is. It's scandalous. Very good word. It is scandalous. And it was all happening so fast. I think like Tuesday night, we kind of got the news. Wednesday, everyone was like, man, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And then, boom, Ron Howard brought on board. Crazy. Crazy town banana pants. But, I mean, I guess it adds a little bit more excitement to this movie. I think we were all kind of lukewarm in our own ways about it. And we had to wait until we saw some footage. But now curiosity is always going to be there as the what might have been.
Yeah.
Well, I am kind of curious about the whole balance between that kind of set plan versus director's input, just because I read another article about Colin Trevorrow's role with the upcoming ninth episode and how his most recent film, I forgot what it was called.
A Book of Henry.
Book of Henry was like doing terrible in reviews. Mm-hmm. So then someone wrote in an article about how, you know, how does that play into the whole upcoming Star Wars stuff, in the sense that if you have that outline, could you just put any director in there without any, you know, negative sides to it? Like, it's kind of already cookie cut out in a way.
Right. We actually talked about that last week. Thanks for listening to the show, by the way.
You're welcome.
Yeah, we were curious how that was going to play out. You know, not all movies are going to be hits. That's just the way life works. Some people are going to like them, other people aren't. And this particular one, Book of Henry, it got slammed pretty hard by critics. And so it's obviously way too early to talk about episode 9. But I know there is going to be sort of that shadow of doubt in people's minds. But we obviously don't know what they plan on doing with episode 9, since so much of it, maybe so much of it has to be changed because of Carrie Fisher passing away. Who knows what the future holds for this franchise. Anybody else have anything to add? Yay, nay, happy for Ron Howard? I think so.
Yeah, I'm stoked about it. And I think he's going to do a great job. So if this is what gives us if this is what keeps Lucasfilm and Disney on a streak of not delivering bad Star Wars movies to us, then let's keep that train on the tracks. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't imagine any movie in the Star Wars universe where the lead, especially a respected character like Han Solo, would be given the Ace Ventura treatment. I mean, that's like practically spitting in everybody's face and making a Jar Jar standalone movie.
Mm-hmm. That is weird.
Nobody wants that.
I wonder if that is true. That's nuts. And again, I'm surprised that they got as far as they did, if that's the case.
Yeah.
So, interesting. All right, moving on. Transformers. The last night, and hopefully the last movie. My God. So, Tuesday night, I think it was, Felix dragged me to the theater. He was like, hey, you want to go see it? I'm like, yeah, sure. What do? I leave my bedroom, I walk to my kitchen, and I just start chugging shots. I'm like, I'm gonna do this, but I need a little bit of help. And so I just started drinking. I poured 3 shots of the tequila there, and then I chased it with a monster, and I had just brushed my teeth, so then I drank a big glass of water because my mouth was just tingling all over, and I didn't know what to do with it. And I hop in the car, we go to iPick, I sit in my recliner, and or not recliner, we got the cheap seats. And it's a cushiony seat, though. And I sit back, and I watch this movie for 2 hours and 47 minutes. It's the longest fucking movie of Transformers either falling, flying, or firing a gun. And the poor gentleman next to me fell asleep like 18 times. It was just long and boring. And God, I hope I never have to watch this movie again. Felix, what say you?
Well, that's in comparison to me, who had actually rewatched all four previous Transformers films before I went in to watch this one. And then, actually, surprisingly, it is not the longest Transformer film of all time. It's actually the second shortest one, right behind the first one.
Are you kidding me?
Nope, I am not. I looked up the run times.
It felt like an eternity.
Hang on. I think I got it here.
It had a few fun moments, and like those real human moments, which I tend to enjoy. But I, as a whole, not a fan.
Okay, so yeah, Transformers: The Last Night runtime is 2 hours and 29 minutes. First one was 2 hours 24. Everything else is longer than 2:30.
Oh my god! Pass.
Overall, yeah, I wasn't. I think it's reached that point for me where I'm like, I'm with everyone else. I mean, clearly the film kind of functioned in a way that it's trying to start the whole spin-off idea for the whole Transformers
Hasbro
franchise
universe.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the film, I don't think spoilers really applies, but you find out that at some point that Bumblebee actually existed on Earth at an older point. Like, he was fighting during World War II against the Nazis.
Yes.
For the Allies. So, I mean, that logistically would probably lead into the whole Transformers, the Bumblebee spinoff. And then, I don't know, it was very as terrible as the other films are, at least they had an overall arc or thread going through them, and this one was just all over the place. Like, it's like three different types of movies mixed into one, and they didn't know how to just slim it down into one.
I hate them all. I like the first two, which is weird because I can't stand Shia LaBeouf. But one thing
must have been Megan Fox that did it.
Totally. But like, one thing that bothers me is the Autobots have like all these ridiculous cannons on their person, and they'll be shooting. Like, John Goodman's got this Gatling gun, and he's just blowing shit up all day long, and then as soon as he shoots a Decepticon, nothing really happens. The bullets just kind of bounce off. But then you put like a machine gun in a human's hand, and then the Decepticon's getting blown all to shit. And it's like, I don't understand how the Autobot technology isn't far superior in just blowing holes in these Decepticons. It's just lame. Doesn't make any sense. So I'm not a fan. I'm over it. The movie actually didn't perform as well as the others. It's the lowest in the franchise history, but it is doing well overseas, so that's worth noting. So far, the global box office for this weekend was $265 million, so people are going to see it. It's still doing well in the grand scheme of things, but it only hit $70 million here in the United States, so I think it's safe to say that we, as a collective in the United States, are over Transformers, at least for the time being. And it might even be just biased towards Michael Bay. Maybe if there was a different person at the helm, then it could garner a new audience. There's just a lot of hate for that man, unfortunately. And he makes some interesting movies. He's definitely an ambitious director. He's got some really cool shots, some epic shots, but everything doesn't need to be that way. If a six-year-old went to a water fountain to take a drink, it would be like from a helicopter, and it would be quick cuts, and it would just be insane when all it needs to be is a little kid going to get a drink. You know what I mean? It's weird. That's just how he does things. I'm done with the Transformers.
Bottom line, all you need to know is Unicron's coming. That's it.
Yes. Yeah, Unicron is coming. It's so stupid. Anyway, moving on. Last week, we talked about Venom and how that was going to be tied to the MCU, Marvel's MCU, which was going to be exciting. And that was because Miss Pascal was going on and on about, oh, yeah, it's going to be great. It's all, you know, Kevin Feige did this amazing thing by tying the collective universe together, and it's amazing, and this is going to be a part of it. But now it's almost like a recanted statement, and it's more these are standalone movies and comparing them to the X-Men franchise and saying how the Spidey spinoffs exist as Marvel movies in the same way that X-Men films do, but not as facets of the Disney-owned MCU. That kind of changes things a little bit. So now it's like anything can happen in this movie and it's not going to have any consequences whatsoever towards the bigger picture. I guess that's fine, but none of us here at the Geek Legacy Podcast were terribly excited about the Venom movie until it was brought to our attention that it was going to be part of the MCU, and now my interest has again fizzled. I don't know about you guys.
No, you're right. I mean, we're overall, I think people are wanting that whole comprehensive universe for Marvel, and just by kind of not putting this in there, it just lowers the interests even more. You know?
Mm-hmm. What about you, Randy?
Well, I only became kind of interested last week when I heard it was actually going to be tied to the Spider-Man movies. So I don't know. I mean, I guess there's still some kind of tertiary ties. I don't know. I'm just going to go into it with a wait and see kind of attitude.
Sure.
Because I like the Venom character enough to still be intrigued enough to want to watch it.
Sure, that makes sense. He so far, it's not confirmed, but we're led to believe that Carnage is going to be the villain. So it looks like it's going to be a bit of a CG romp. Take it or leave it. I mean, most people like Spider-Man. It would be great if Tom Holland's character were to appear, but maybe the deal that Disney and Sony came to with the pictures was that Tom Holland will appear in the Marvel Cinematic Universe before he appears in whatever Sony has in store for him. So, who knows? Not excited about that.
No.
Let's see. What else we got here? Jurassic World. Got a title. Jurassic World 2. More Jurassic-y.
Definitely not.
Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdom is what we got going for it. What
as
is
opposed to the Magic Kingdom?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like the park, they're calling it like a kingdom. Felix, you are sort of the resident Jurassic Park nerdo. What are your thoughts on this title?
I think it's interesting because and this kind of is like the whole new Star Wars trilogy thing. But if the title is anything to go by, it seems like it's kind of mirroring the whole The Lost World Jurassic Park naming of the second film of that trilogy. But at the same time, it's interesting to see that they've added a subtitle instead of putting maybe a number or some other Jurassic blank in there. Just because it seems like they are definitely wanting to keep the whole Jurassic World concept here, in the sense that it is more than just the park now. It is a global thing.
So, I mean, I was thinking that it would be There's a lot of loose dinosaurs, and now they have to regain control of the park. Like, at first it was just survive and get out. Now it's, holy shit, we have dinosaurs roaming around outside their cages. Let's right the wrong. And sort of like Olympus has fallen kind of thing. And that guy, Gerard Butler, is going to come in and kick some ass and put dinosaurs in their place. That's what I was thinking. Like, they got to figure out how are they going to open this park up again. They got to contain this shit. They got a T-Rex roaming around. They got Blue roaming around. Who knows what the hell that Indominus Rex did. Broke a lot of fences, I'm sure. And now they got to fix it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, that might be a part of the new film, but at the same time, I feel like they're trying to break away from the established mold. And by doing that, I mean, because they don't want to be making the same mistakes over and over again. And I mean, in the poster, you have the tagline from Ian Malcolm about how life finds a way, right? Mm-hmm. And his character is going to show up in the film, of course, as well. But I just feel like this is probably, and maybe this is just me being ignorant or some hopeful, but
probably.
But I'm hoping to see a film over that is kind of going towards something new and something thought provoking that's outside of what the previous ones did. I mean, we know that there will be a portion of it that will revisit the aftermath of the Jurassic World Park from the first film. But at the same time, we've got, you know, the whole other thread of how, you know, this whole dinosaur making business can potentially have become globalized.
I think it's going to be a courtroom thriller. and it's going to be all about how they're getting sued for all those people that were being eaten on in Jurassic World.
Class action lawsuit.
Yes.
I like it.
It's going to be the biggest courtroom thriller since A Few Good Men.
Where are they going to get the money to pay back the damages? They're going to be working in a circus.
They're going to be selling like T-Rex fillets to to the highest of highest end restaurants.
Exotic meat sold here. Mm-hmm. Now we're talking.
Some nice Christmas meat.
Mm-hmm. Does the park serve dinosaur meat?
No. Definitely not.
It's too expensive. There'd be no return on investment. Yeah. All right. Even like the ones that don't quite make it, like the mentally disabled dinosaurs.
I just have a mental image of what that would look like. But no, think about it like the beef that they kind of grow in a petri dish now. You can make a hamburger without ever harvesting the beef from a living cow. You just kind of genetically create it. They could totally do the same thing with raptor meat or something like that.
Yeah.
Make raptor burgers. Raptor wraps.
Yeah. Now we're talking.
I mean, this shit practically sells itself.
It does. Honestly. Jeez. I like your style. Send it in.
I'm sure it'll get shot down quickly, but damn it, we tried.
Fuck those guys. They don't know nothing. Anywho. All right, so let's move on. Patty Jenkins, Geoff Johns, the reports that they're already working on Wonder Woman 2. They got a treatment underway, which is basically like, what, 8 pages of a movie? An outline? Wonder Woman's going to kick ass. The end. So far, this film has grossed $652 million worldwide. It is the highest grossing film for a female director. So hats off to Patty Jenkins, crushing it behind the camera. It's exciting. I'm ready for Wonder Woman 2. Didn't take long. This one's still in the theaters, and I'm ready. I'm ready to see what happens next. Should be good.
Yeah,
shit.
I'd love to see it. What time period? What era do you think it's going to take place?
I don't know. I hope it's current.
Yeah, I know you don't. You're not a fan of period pieces.
Ugh, they're the worst. I wouldn't be opposed to it being back in her home world either.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Because that brings up my next question is, like, who would the villain be? She's already fought and defeated a god.
Right.
I mean, where do you go from there?
Two gods.
Two gods. okay. All right. Touche. Touche. I didn't think about it that way.
I'm an idea man, Randy.
Clearly.
That's how we do. But yeah, totally. I'm excited. Bring it. I thought I was under the impression that in the event that Wonder Woman was successful, Gal Gadot and Patty Jenkins would be brought on for another film. But at this point, I was also led to believe that Patty Jenkins has not signed on to direct said sequel just yet. After all this success, I wouldn't be surprised if negotiations need to take place. You know, she's obviously she has a feather in her cap that this movie will perform, so maybe she should get a little bit more monies. But that's obviously none of our business. But I would like to be a fly on the wall during that conversation. Anywho, moving on. Game of Thrones, Season 7, Trailer Number 2. Sort of cranked that shit up to 11. I think we're all pretty excited. The Season 7 premieres, what, July 16th? Sound right? Sounds
yes.
Right. Yes. Hungry for apples? absolutely. So this trailer begins with Peter Baelish being just sort of the cryptic creeper that he is. Sounds like he's giving Sansa advice, you know, attack over here, attack there, do this, do that. He definitely has his own agenda, and I cannot wait to see where this young man ends up when the credits roll for the final time. Do you think he's going to survive? First of all, let's just ask this question. Is Peter Baelish going to make it to the end of Game of Thrones?
I'm going to say yes, because I think he's the one sitting on the throne.
I like your style. Now we're talking, twirling his little porn stash.
Uh-huh.
That would be fantastic. With Sansa on his lap.
A couple of, yeah, and two more ladies standing on either side.
Yep, that would be hot.
Style.
I'll take it. Felix, you think Baelish will make it to the end?
Oh, God, I don't know. Doesn't everyone die? I don't know.
Maybe.
It's to be determined, right?
Yeah, TBD. I hope he survives. I've already got the mental image of him sitting on the throne and Sansa on his lap. Maybe he's wearing a Santa Claus hat, I don't know. But it's a little weird. Got a cup, a goblet of sorts. Drinking and smiling, that smirk is just amazing. So, that would be fun to see. We get to see more of the North. They're back on the wall. The Starks like to travel, and they like the cold. And then we get to see Daenerys and her whole camp hanging out at Dragonstone. It's kind of cool. They've made it. They are now on the west side. They are no longer in Essos. And that's exciting shit. And a lot of dragons. Lots of fucking dragons. I'm curious what the total runtime is of dragons on screen this season. Their budget gets more and more every year. You know, in the first season when they're having this big old epic tournament for the new Hand of the King, there's like 8 people in the audience. They clearly didn't know that this show was going to be a hit at that time. And they had like $5 to make it happen. And now they have crazy dragons flying all about.
No wonder there's fewer episodes because they're dumping all their money into those like 6 or 7 episodes, just like making them super chock full of VFX and CGI and badass looking dragons. Absolutely. And they do look pretty badass in their adulthood.
They do. They're giant and they look amazing. And last season didn't really let us breathe. It was one horrible thing happening after another. It was very fast paced and it was probably, in my opinion at least, it was the best season so far, was the last season. A lot was going on, a lot of answered questions, a lot of movement. All the pieces were in play, it wasn't anybody dilly-dallying. It was, wow, we have 10 episodes, we gotta make shit happen fast. And they certainly did, and I hope that trend continues. I would hate for it to be a lollygagging episode when the show premieres. Moving on, Jon Snow. He's sort of got this voiceover action happening where he says, "For centuries, our families fought together against their common enemy. Despite their differences, together, we need to do the same if we're going to survive. Because the enemy is real, it's always been real." Do you think he is talking to Daenerys about this? Obviously, I think the common enemy is the White Walkers. And I'm just curious which family he is talking about when he says for centuries. I would imagine it was the Targaryens, since they were ruling the Western kingdoms for so long. But stranger things have happened. I mean, honestly, they were fighting together until the rebellion. But the Starks have been, at least in this neck of the woods, for like 1,000 years.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I think it is going to be the meeting.
She's like, "I don't need your fucking family, man. I got dragons." Beat it, farm boy. This should be interesting. We talked about this before, where, are the Lannisters going to play a pivotal role in this season? Are they going to stick around just because they're the Lannisters and they're that amazing? Or are they going to just get just the shit kicked out of them this season and then we don't have to worry about them anymore? What do you think? Do you think that they'll be able to hold King's Landing for another season?
I personally wouldn't mind seeing that because it's so much fun when they have power.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'd like to see them hold it right till the very end.
I'll take it. What about you, Felix? Do you want Daenerys, or not Daenerys, Cersei taking permanent residence in King's Landing?
That is where they shine. So, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing them hold it for a good amount of time.
Two things could happen. They could either deal with the Lannisters first and then the White Walkers, or they could deal with the White Walkers and then once the kingdom is safe, then go take over King's Landing. That seems like it might be the more practical approach, since winter is here and this threat is very real and they are going to be invading south of the wall. Deal with the White Walkers first and then go take up residence in King's Landing.
I mean, I could easily see it both ways, but
that way you're milking out more Lannister time too. That way in season 7 they're still there.
No. Yeah, I mean, I'm cool with that. Deal with the White Walkers.
And then the trailer ends with fucking Sansa. She says, "When the snow falls and the white winds blow, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives." Is that as simple as we stick together and make it through this? Or if you go out and do your own thing, you're not going to make it? She's talking about her brother? She's talking about John?
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. I didn't think about it, but yeah, I'd say that, sure.
Could just be a bunch of Stark mumbo jumbo. It's probably written on the shield somewhere. Fuckers. Any final thoughts on the season?
No, just I cannot wait for the 16th. Can't get here soon enough.
Oh, I know. And then we're going to go off to Comic-Con, and then we're going to probably miss that episode the next week. Thank goodness for DVRs, right?
Yeah, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for listening to another fun and festive episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. And remember to visit geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews. While you're there, check out the other podcasts that we have. It's the Pixelated Podcast, where Stephen K. James and I talk about what's happening in the world of video games. And it's a lot of fun. And remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter @GeekLegacy and @PixelatedPod. Thank you so much.